Well, folks, once again, we're ready for Valley Edition, only today we have a special treat. Mark Kelsey, publisher of The Frontiersman, is here in his usual seat, but replacing both Terry Snyder and Zaz Hallander, and this is a big task, but he is big enough to do this, is none other than Murph O'Brien. Welcome, Murph.
Good morning.
Okay. Now, having said that, what we're going to do is rely upon Murph because he has expertise of a certain sort that is not possessed, I don't believe, by the two of us, because we weren't there for the whole event. And that, of course, is the first in the series of lectures that are going to be conducted at the Glenn Massey Theater at Matsu College. And none other than a guy by the name of Tim Bradner was out there talking last night. And he gave an interesting presentation. So, go for it. Murph, what did you hear?
Well, I heard lots of things. I think the first thing I want to say is that the new Glenn Massey Theater and Auditorium, that was my first visit there, is just amazing. And it's a tremendous addition to the community. And I look forward to many events and participating in many events there. And my hat's off to Talis Kohlberg and all the Matsu College folks, as well as Northrim Bank for sponsoring this lecture series, and they're endowing it. So I'm looking forward to many, many great lectures and presentations to come. Tim Bradner is pretty amazing. He has a long history in Alaska. He's been a journalist. He's worked for the oil companies. He publishes a couple periodicals relative to the Legislative Digest and Economic Report, but this is a real down-home fellow as far as making a presentation. And he was talking about, oil, the current price of oil, the impacts that may have on the state and the budget and the people in general, and what it means, It was very interesting. He gave us a history of, for those of us who are of white hair and aging up a bit, that were around back in 86 when there was the first big drop in oil prices. And then he reminded us that there were a few more, one in 92, one in 98, and I believe one in 2009. And certainly the one in 1986 really had a significant impact.
And the reverberations continue. I had been there last night at the reception prior to the event itself, had a chance to talk with former Anchorage Mayor Rick Maestrom, and as we were talking, of all the things that popped up was 86, mainly because, as he pointed out, we're talking billions of dollars evaporated from the tax rolls in the city of Anchorage, for example. Not a trivial event.
No, and keeping in mind in 86, the permanent fund had been established in 76, and revenues started flowing in the late 70s, but there wasn't a cushion at that point in time. And the way the state government had to deal with it is that they they eliminated $1 billion worth of capital spending immediately, from one moment to next, it was gone. And that had a significant impact on the construction boom, the infrastructure development and the like.
Right, right. Mark, do you remember those days?
I do not. Yes, I do, but I was not here. I remember them in a different context, but I've certainly been here for long enough and been in the news business especially for long enough to know that those were definitely significant times in Alaska. Not repeated since, but certainly as Murph pointed out, there have been dips. And I would say the one in the late 90s had the effect of really getting the conversation started about tapping the permanent fund or, alternative streams of revenue in general. But the other thing certainly worth noting about $1 billion of capital projects going away, you know, that's, I think the temptation is there to think of that as, oh, that's $1 billion in savings. But there's a huge, huge domino effect of those dollars being put into the economy. So it's way more complex than that.
Right. And I think the point that Tim was making is that, you know, even though it's, things are similar, things are definitely different this time around. You know, what bounced the state back from the crisis that was created in 86 was actually a disaster, and that was the Exxon Valdez and the billions of dollars that was infused into the economy there. But, you know, 92, you know, I had to think a little bit about the 92 dip, because it, you know, by that time, diversification in the economy has occurred. There was more of a cushion, you know, in state savings accounts, you know, not just the permanent fund, but the budget reserve accounts that are mandatory. And again, in 98, oil revenues, price of oil dropped significantly. And again, there were even more in the way of savings to kind of mitigate that. There was, you know, a drawdown on activity, the budgets were reduced, but still the, you know, the economy was not hit as hard as it was in 86. And I think he's thinking that, you know, with this current situation, we're probably going to have a slow rebound, and it's probably a good time to give us some pause to think about how things are going to be different in the future. You know, can we continue to depend on 90% of the state revenues coming from a single source, or as he put it, a single pipeline.
And so he used the T word at some point, did he?
Well, he used several things. Okay. You know, he talked about before he used the T word, he talked about citizens contributing to the cause.
Ah, nice phrase.
Yes. So, but you know, you go back to 76, and when the permanent fund was established, you know, it was established, you know, as sold as a rainy day account. And so, you know, what he's was this, I think, laying the groundwork for is a bit of a paradigm shift in how we address revenues and state government and capital projects, capital funding in the future. You know, if we think that there's going to be another major oil find up north, that's probably not true onshore anyway. There's several small fields up there that can contribute. You know, a higher degree of difficulty in developing them, but still, if the price of oil, as he suggests, and this is based on his conversations with different, you know, experts in the field, economists and oil folks, there's probably going to be a gradual rebound over the next few years, and it'll probably end up somewhere in the $80 to $90 range. You know, it's probably not going to get back up to $110. So $80, $90 helps out significantly, but it's not a cure-all. So do we look at, you know, some of the revenues, the investment revenues from the earnings of the permanent fund? Do we look at citizens contributing, or, you know, some type of either statewide sales tax or statewide income tax? But the point he made, that not any one of them will solve the issue. You know, we need to figure out how to keep the pipeline flowing at least at its current level, 500,000 barrels a day. You know, we need to look at, you know, what other revenue enhancements there can be, and, you know, what other further diversification in the economy can occur. And, you know, it's just the opportunity to look a little bit differently and have a broader strategy on how to put the funding together.
Economic diversification is definitely hypercritical here. We've known this for decades. The conversation has been going on for decades, but it's always been put off. You know, we'll worry about that next year, next whatever. But these times really, really underscore the need for an adult conversation, so to speak, about where we're going, how we're going to get there, and what we're going to do when we get there. The current situation with the 90% of general fund revenue coming from one industry is not sustainable. That shouldn't be news to anyone. Hard decisions will have to be made. We may have to talk about a sales tax or something that, you know, folks pretty much everywhere else accept as their reality. You know, whether you call it contributing to the cause or, you know, a user fee or something, it definitely promotes a sense of shared responsibility and, you know, takes away the hands out for handouts attitude that does not help us in the long run.
So I'm wondering if there is a sweet spot, if you can call it that, where the price of oil will remain low long enough so that we don't see a reprieve coming too soon, so that you are able to take these ideas, some of which you've mentioned, and actually develop them. Did he say anything about his sense of timing here?
Well, he did. And I think that what the estimates is that for the next 18 to 24 months, the price of oil will be lower, you know, in this current range of 50 or so dollars a barrel. That equates to about $2.5 billion in revenue for the state, which is down significantly from last year, which I think was close to $5 or $5.5 billion. And so, you know, and you got, you know, he pointed out that there is $14-15 billion in the different budget reserve funds. So, I mean, there's, if used wisely, there's a way to create a softer landing, which is, you know, the major difference between now and 30 years ago in 86 when there was no buffer. But he says that, yes, it is time to start looking at how to do things differently. You know, and it's not necessarily radical shifts, but it's a need for a shift in thinking that, you know, that the sole source of state revenues is primarily oil. And it's probably can't depend on that in the
future. So my understanding from what you've said and other reports I've had is that he was emphasizing the direction and encouraging a shift to do some of this thinking, hard thinking, but he was not coming up with and saying, I have an answer, and this is what you should do.
No, I mean, again, he says it's like any good cook. There's a variety of ingredients that go into the final dish, and that's what we need to start looking at. And I need to say that he was not pessimistic. He was optimistic. You know, he was optimistic with the future of Alaska. But, you know, it's just the next stage in the evolution of Alaska of how do you provide the funding for the services that people desire? What services, you know, do people desire? And how do you get from point A to point B to provide those services?
So just a few comments perhaps about the audience. I understood there were maybe 200 people or maybe a few more there in that wonderful new venue. And my observation was the people going in represented quite a cross-section of interested people. How would you characterize the questioning and the audience's reception of this?
You're right. I would estimate 225, 250 people were there, and it ranged from students that were probably asked to be there to interested parties from the whole spectrum of the valley life. And you know, there were no gasps, you know, no outbursts of are you out of your mind. It was, I think, everybody generally accepted what Tim was laying out as what the issues were and what the possible solutions were. And the questions dealt with, you know, different forms of taxation, dealt with, you know, what are the prospects of the National Petroleum Reserve. At what point will the pipeline no longer be feasible to operate? As far as throughput, and he's not the overall expert in responding to all these, but he felt that what he's been told is that at 300,000, 250,000 barrels a day, the pipeline would still operate. But he feels strongly that that 500,000 barrel a day target, maybe a little bit more, is something that can be maintained into the future with the different developments that are going on, and especially as the price of oil creeps back up. But I think generally, he was very well received.
Okay. Well, this is kind of an interesting thing because as we have stated here and others have stated, oil is remains the big driver. And on a local level, there have been a number of meetings that have occurred recently. Both school board met, borough assembly has met. And it's kind of interesting to listen because it appears that perhaps from those bodies, which depend in many ways on funding from the state, the school district certainly, when they look at their budget, but also the assembly. And the assembly at this last meeting on Tuesday, where they had a very, very short meeting, and Barbara Doty was seated, so there was a full complement across there. It's nice to see that filled out that way. A fairly short and focused meeting, but the takeaway, the piece that I was most interested in was a lack of support for a resolution that would have directed the mayor, for example, to go to Juneau and lobby for municipal revenue sharing. They stated explicitly to say top of our list is not municipal revenue sharing, but rather the $35 million, which would be the next component in funding for the extension of the railroad down to the port. Mark, your brow furrowed there.
I would make the case that that is a visionary idea, as tempting as it is to just go for the easy cash of revenue sharing. Railroads and ports and those kinds of things are super critical for long-term success and economic viability. It's a great project. It will pay dividends down the line. I know everybody wants the immediate gratification of money now, and let's face it, there is a certain amount that is needed right now for sure, but spending on that rail link and the port will come back to pay dividends for sure, and I'm certainly all for it.
Okay, and of course, it just to keep listeners and everybody on track, so to speak, this will not complete the railroad to the port. It requires continuing funding in order to make this happen, and also some continuing contracts so that the railroad, once it's there and you look at it, you can say it is actually going to carry something from point A to point B, make that happen. Murph, any comments?
Well, one thing, kind of falling back a little bit to what Tim was saying was that, and I've, in my wonderful memory, kind of spaced this part out, is that a lot of what is going on, too, is that with the budget reserves and the reductions in the capital budget that Governor Walker has proposed for this year, they're looking at, if they continue to target about the $5.5 billion general fund budget, they can stretch that out to around 2022, 2023, which is approximately the time that the natural gas pipeline, if it's developed, is supposed to be coming online. And that was one thing to, kind of a target that that Tim was pointing out. But he also identified that there are needs to continue with infrastructure development. The state will be funding the match to secure the 90% funding of highway projects and aviation projects and other infrastructure projects.
Sure.
So you don't want to, his message was you don't want to stop with the infrastructure because you need the infrastructure to to support the future economy.
Yeah. Well, one of the other aspects of this, though, and bringing it right down to the local level, is the Borough Assembly past a few years has assiduously worked to narrow the budget, both in particular some of the inflow. And the present time, I think, feels a little bit as if what's going to happen is you're going to be seeing a need to focus on additional revenue sources in addition to the big projects for something such as normal operations of the borough. And that's at least what some observers have pointed out at the present time. And if the state is not going to be in a position to being able to do this, then what we've been talking about on a broader scale that Bradner has pointed to may also be required on some local basis. How do you get additional funding to support borough activities? Any comments about that? Other than say,
Well, I think that, again, that was, you know, Tim Bradner's point, was that, you know, if what the state is doing at looking at, you know, what it can do to diversify its revenue flow, its cash flow, is probably what each and every community has to look at, you know, and and that's difficult. I mean, it's a little bit different way of viewing things that, there is a need for kind of a broader approach to generate revenues, and part of that can come from economic diversification, new job opportunities, things like that. But, you know, again, he was pointing out that there's the whole gamut of consideration of different elements, including, you know, contributions by citizens.
Yes, it's also significant here. If you think about the classic rendering of the state's economy as the three-legged stool, with oil and gas revenue being one leg, federal spending being a second leg, and everything else being the third leg, you can see the conversation is all the more important now because federal spending is also drying up. So this is not just about the price of oil being low, and it really truly does underscore the need for real dialogue about what we're going to do next.
Okay, and my observations, having sat at the Assembly's meeting this past Tuesday, is that there have been some changes and what appears to be some increased dialogue occurring among Assembly members as they begin to confront these things. So even on a local level, perhaps paralleling some of the experience that people are pointing to down with the legislature, it's more difficult to stay in your island when everything is sinking, I suppose, or the waters are rising around you. Mm-hmm. Well, Murph, last comments?
Well, again, I am very thrilled about the prospect of future lectures through this Mat-Su College lecture series that's
right.
Coming up. And I think it's a tremendous opportunity for people to stay informed on what appears to be statewide and certainly borough-wide issues. And I would encourage people to pay attention to the Frontiersmen, because I'm sure that they will be advertising the lecture series as to when the next one will be coming up. But it was a very worthwhile evening, and it was great to be there with a lot of real good folks.
Okay. Mark, any last comments?
Just a general thanks for this conversation. I think the more we talk about it, the better off we are for sure. It's been great being here on this Y chromosome edition of Valley Edition, and thanks especially to Murph for his time and insights here.
Okay,
I appreciate it.
All right, another end to another Valley Edition, and next week we'll be back with probably the typical mix. Have a good week.